WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Protein degradation can target and destroy cancer-causing proteins right inside the cell. It's how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, we're almost halfway through January. How are those New Year's resolutions going? You know, the ones about the diet? My next guest has a lot to say about America's expanding waistlines and what's causing the rising levels of obesity and obesity-related disease here and around the world, and that the cure might require more government action than individual willpower. Dr. Robert Lustig is a pediatric endocrinologist who runs the Weight Assessment for Teen and Child Health Program at the University of California at San Francisco. His new book is Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. And maybe we should welcome Dr. Lustig back to WNYC, because many of you may have heard the podcast that he did on Alec Baldwin's Here's the Thing series, which was so widely listened to and responded to. So, Dr. Lustig, welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Brian. Appreciate it.
And as people can tell from your book's subtitle and the video that you did that went viral, you see sugar as the main culprit in rising obesity levels, correct?
All right. Let's get this right out on the table. There are a lot of things that cause obesity. If you look at Mozafarian's paper in the New England Journal from last year, potato chips and French fries are actually the two biggest contributors to increasing weight.
Based on them being inherently weight-gaining foods, or based on the fact that people eat so much of them?
Well, I think probably both. Carbohydrate and fat together is really the recipe for increasing a waistline, and that is exactly what French fries and potato chips are. Sugared beverages come in third, and I'm not saying that sugared beverages are the cause of obesity. What I have said, and I will continue to say, is that what sugar does that's so particularly egregious is it takes obesity to metabolic syndrome. Metabolic syndrome being that cluster of diseases, type 2 diabetes, dyslipidemia, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, and likely cancer and dementia, that basically accounts for 75% of healthcare expenditures. So when we talk about obesity, what I'm really talking about is the chronic metabolic disease that comes mm-hmm. alongside.
Now,
that's where sugar is particularly egregious. That's what I'm worried about, because that's what makes you unhealthy.
A few years ago, we had some raucous debates on this show about metabolic syndrome, and what it came down to at that time was the sugar is the evil group versus the fat is the evil group, right? So it's
right.
Like the Dr. Atkins versus the low-fat, prescription doctors. Are you in one of those camps? Are you in the fat is not that bad really camp?
Here's the deal. What's a fat? There are seven different kinds of fats. Over here on the left side, we have omega-3s. They are not just okay. They are heart healthy. They'll save your life. Over on the other side, you got the trans fats, and they're the devil incarnate. They'll kill you. And you've got everything in between. You've got the monounsaturates, the polyunsaturates, the saturated fats, the medium-chain triglycerides, and the omega-6s in that order. So when you talk about fat, what are you talking about? Because a fat's not a fat. You know what? An amino acid's not an amino acid, and a carbohydrate's not a carbohydrate. Bottom line, Brian, a calorie is not a calorie. If you believe a calorie is a calorie, you will never extricate yourself from this disaster. And I just read this morning that Coca-Cola is planning on airing 2-minute spots during the Super Bowl to address the obesity problem and the fact that it's not their fault.
It's
because a calorie is a calorie to Coca-Cola. Let me tell you, that is the whole point of this book. As soon as you get off the notion that a calorie is a calorie, as soon as you accept that that dogma might actually not be true, all hell breaks loose.
It's exactly the same.
It's very clear that the quality of our food determines the quantity.
Listeners, maybe you know Robert Lustig, Dr. Lustig, from his viral video about sugar. Maybe you heard him on Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin. Or if you just want to get in on this conversation, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And, you know, we compare things to the NRA at our peril, but it's exactly what the NRA is doing, what you said Coke is going to do in the Super Bowl. The NRA is like, yeah, there are all these things that contribute to gun violence, mental health, ultra-violent video games, everything except guns. And Coke is saying, oh, yeah, there are lots of things that contribute to obesity, everything except sweetened drinks, when really maybe the answer in both cases is all of the above.
Well, bottom line, sweetened drinks are part of the problem in terms of obesity. That's not what I'm talking about. There are a lot of ways to get obese. What I'm talking about is what is causing $192 billion a year to go down a rat hole in terms of fixing the chronic metabolic disease, the type 2 diabetes in particular. You know, in 30 years ago, there was not one child with type 2 diabetes, and now it is one-third of all diabetes diagnoses. There are 40,000 children in America today with type 2 diabetes. And you know what? We want to help them. We want to help them very specifically.
Rich on Staten Island. You're on WNYC with Robert Lustig. Hello.
Yes, hi. I can personally vouch for the fact that a calorie is not a calorie. I lost 100 pounds on the Atkins diet. I ate tons of calories. I ate meat, I ate chicken, I ate everything that they tell you you're going to die from. And my cholesterol level went down, my HDL level went up, and I agreed wholeheartedly about carbohydrate intake.
And did you lose some weight?
I'm sorry?
Did you lose some weight?
100 pounds.
100 pounds.
Yeah.
Rich,
listen,
thank you. And so
I am not against the Atkins diet. I'm for it. I'm not against the vegan diet. I'm for it. Here's the question, Brian. What does the Atkins diet, the Ornish diet, the vegan diet, the paleo diet, the glycemic index diet, they all work, except they don't. Because after 2 months, every diet regresses to the mean. But what do these diets all have in common? They share two things in common. Every successful diet has two things in common. Number one, low sugar. Number two, high fiber. And you know what low sugar, high fiber is called? It's called real food. That's what I'm for. I'm for real food. And I don't care if you do it with fat, and I don't care if you do it with carbohydrate. If you do it with real food, the fiber comes along with the carbohydrate to mitigate the negative aspects of the carbohydrate. If you're consuming real food, the fats that you're getting are actually the good fats, not the ones that the food industry puts in there for shelf life. And therefore, it doesn't matter. You know, Michael Pollan said it. Alice Waters said it. I'm just giving you the biochemical evidence for why it's true.
Nicole in Great Neck, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I've been going through this with my kids, and we've been talking a lot about real food versus, like, processed food. And so while I've kind of been looking at a lot of the real foods, and they do include sugar, and they do include, like, whole milk, which would have been, not sugar, they include, like, maple syrup and other things to make things sweet. But they do include a lot of fat using, like, whole milk and making things taste good. So when I deal with my kids, I'm trying to make things taste good and be somewhat sweet because they like sweets. But then I resort back to my old training where I feel bad giving them whole milk,
right,
you know, or heavy cream.
It's such a great question because you know, Dr. Lustig, there you can label a product all natural and
Absolutely.
It's got tons of things like whole milk and sugar.
It's a disaster. Let's give you an example. How about yogurt? Yogurt's a real disaster. You know, what is yogurt? It's sour milk. It's supposed to be sour, except in America where it's sweet. Now, why is that? Well, because if it was sour, nobody would eat it. So what do? Well, if you're in Russia, you take little chunks of whole fruit and you throw it in the sour yogurt, and that's how you deal with it. But in America, what we do is instead we add something that's, quote, all natural. It's called evaporated cane juice. You know what evaporated cane juice is?
What?
Sugar. Absolutely no difference.
And that was the other part of Nicole's question. So I'm sure so many people have this question that I'm, I want to make sure you deal with it explicitly, are honey or agave syrup, any of these things, any better than what we call sugar or what we love to hate that's called high fructose corn syrup?
They're all the same. As I say in the book, it's not the vehicle that matters, it's the payload. And the payload is the molecule fructose. Fructose is the sweet part of sugar. Fructose is the molecule we seek. Fructose is the reason why anybody eats fruit in the first place. Right? Fructose, unfortunately, because a calorie is not a calorie, is metabolized completely differently from that of glucose, which is the energy of life. Fructose is only metabolized in the liver. Fructose goes to liver fat instead of to liver starch. And when you make liver fat out of fructose, basically that's what starts the entire cascade of downstream diseases that we've been talking about. So it doesn't matter if it's a maple syrup or honey. Actually, agave is even worse because agave is 75% fructose. The others are basically a 50-50 combination. So, no, it really doesn't matter. Caloric sweeteners were meant to be safe and rare, just like abortion. And the bottom line is they are not safe and they are not rare.
Safe.
And the food industry made it so.
Safe, legal, and rare, President Clinton used to say. Dr. Robert Lustig, author of Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. Bob in Rego Park, you're on the air. Hi, Bob.
Ryan, how you doing, guy? You continue to do an amazing job. Doctor, I'm 58 years old, a vegetarian. I watch my diet tremendously. I love what you're saying. My question is this. The educational system, starting from kindergarten, is supposed to teach. What you're saying, they do not teach. The government does not teach. They deny these things. In fact, milk, as you know in the China study, destroys your bones, creates an acid. What are we to do about the situation where the educational system is teaching nothing?
Well, this is a huge problem. The fact of the matter is it's not even taught in medical schools. You know, in medical school, a calorie is still a calorie. So, you know, and doctors are the ones who say to all their patients, you know, if you'd only exercise, you'd lose weight. You know, because if a calorie is a calorie, and if you burn more calories, you should be able to lose weight. You know what? There is not one single study in the entire world's literature that shows that exercise alone causes weight loss, because a calorie is not a calorie. What happens with exercise, and the reason it's so important, is because it causes muscle gain. And muscle have mitochondria, and mitochondria burn that sugar so you don't make the liver fat. So the more mitochondria you have, the more healthy you are. But the problem is that muscle weighs even more than fat, so you actually gain weight when you exercise. But that's not bad, that's actually good. But here we have all these doctors, you know, basically making their patients feel bad because they didn't lose weight. Oh, you must be non-compliant. You know, this is the most egregious thing that the medical profession does to patients today. And the government, they've sold it, you know, they've bought into this as well because, you know, remember, their job is to sell food abroad. 6% of our exports are food. You think they want to tell people out there in, you know, the rest of the world that maybe processed food ain't so good for you?
So do you take the position that thin is not necessarily healthy and thin people might be in denial because they may just have, you know, fast metabolisms, but they may also be developing these insulin problems?
Absolutely. In fact, if you look at the literature, 20% of obese people have completely normal metabolic signatures. They are going to live a completely normal, healthy life. They're just obese.
How can people find out? We get our, you know, when you have a checkup, they measure your cholesterol and some other things. Can we find out if we're at risk for these metabolic syndromes?
It's not that easy. Actually, the best way is waist circumference, waist size. I always tell my patients, it's not about weight, it's about waist. If your waist circumference is up, that means you have a lot of visceral fat, which means you have a lot of liver fat. And if that's the case, then you're driving those downstream diseases. That's the cheapest way of figuring out whether or not you're at risk. But there are still some people who look completely normal on the outside, but when you do MRIs, looking at the fat in the organs, it's there. In fact, the imager Jimmy Bell at University College London in England coined the term TOFI, T-O-F-I. Thin on the outside, fat on the inside. When you do the MRIs, you can actually see it. Problem is, that's very expensive. There are some lab tests that you can do. A fasting insulin will tell you something. ALT, which is a liver function test, can tell you something. And finally, a uric acid can tell you something about whether or not you have risk for chronic disease. But again, those are things your doctor has to help you with.
Eric in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
How you doing? Yeah, so what I want to ask is, you know, I've been hearing a lot about how we human beings, you know, sort of develop a lot of addictions without even being aware of them, to all sorts of things, including, of course, you know, addiction to fatty foods and stuff. And I find myself sometimes, like, having cravings, like, late at night. I'm trying to overcome my attachment to sugar, but I find myself sometimes getting cravings, and I sense that it's sort of like an addiction, you know, because it almost makes me feel better. And I guess what I'm trying to figure out is how to overcome the addiction to foods that are unhealthy, that we're so attached to, especially in the American diet.
It's really right. One of the ultimate questions. Do you give people ways?
Super question, but let me correct something right now. Fat is not addictive. Okay, fat is maybe habituating, but it is not addictive. On the other hand, sugar shows all of the biochemical changes in the brain, both in animals, and we have correlative data in humans that goes along with addiction. Now, not everybody is sugar addicted, in the same way not everybody's alcohol addicted. And sugar and alcohol are actually metabolized exactly the same way. I wrote a paper basically showing the similarities between the two, because after all, where do you get alcohol from?
So is the behavior, and our time is starting to run short, is the behavior change then to kick sugar different from the behavior change to kick excess fat?
Yes, it is. Basically, what you need to do in order to manage your sugar addiction, number one is, of course, get rid of all the sugar beverages in the house. But the other single thing that you can do that will really make a difference is exercise, because what exercise does is it decreases stress. And when you decrease stress, actually, addiction becomes much less pervasive and problematic.
Let's see if you can give me two 15-second answers. One, sure. That study that got a lot of press the other week, that obesity is actually correlated with longer longevity?
Yes, absolutely, because it's not about the weight. It's about where the fat is. And when you stand on the scale, you can't tell where the fat is. You know, there are four compartments in your body. Bone, more is better. Muscle, more is better. And subcutaneous fat, more is better. And visceral fat, the fat around your organs, more is worse.
And the most important government policies to you to fight all this, are they like Mayor Bloomberg's large sugary drinks ban?
Mayor Bloomberg's big gulp ban is a baby step in the right direction. To me, the big kahuna is to get fructose off the FDA's generally regarded as safe list, because it's not safe. The bottom line is there's a threshold, and we are over it, and there should be some disqualifying level for sugar.
And, of course, Mayor Bloomberg's the gulp ban wouldn't ban actual big gulps, but that's another show. Robert Lustig's new book, Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar, Processed Food, Obesity, and Disease. So important. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Brian.